Well, one of my favorite movies, it's Contact with Jodie Foster. If you haven't seen it, it's an oldie, of course, but goodie. It's incredible about how she was able to travel through stargates and portals to other portions of the universe and other incredible places. I'll never forget that movie. In a moment, Tom Horn, our guest, will talk about a lot of things, including stargates and portals on Coast to Coast AM. Tom Horn is a researcher and freelance writer whose Raider News Update reports have been referred to by writers of the LA Times Syndicate, MSNBC, Christianity Today, WorldNet Daily, White House correspondents, dozens of news magazines and press agencies around the world. Tom has appeared on numerous programs worldwide and once even served as a national spokesperson for Cloud 10 Pictures' movie Deceive, starring Louis Gossett Jr. and Judd Nelson. Excuse me, I'm beginning to choke. Tom's book, The Ehrman Gate, is VMI Publishers' best-selling book. He's back with us on Coast to Coast. Hey, Tom, how are you?
Hey, George. Thank you for inviting me back on your show.
I couldn't wait to get you back. You've got me all choked up tonight, as a matter of fact.
I hear that.
So what have you been up to?
There's always something weird, strange, unexpected going on in this interesting world that we live in. Going here and there, working on some new book projects that are kind of top secret at this moment. But we just got back from Denver, Colorado, where we were in some meetings up there. Actually, I got to meet with the former Attorney General John Ashcroft, and we went to a private dinner with about 10 or 11 people around a table. Talked about the future of politics and some other things. I'm going to be writing some editorials on these, so I don't want to spoil, my own near future articles. But yeah, a lot of stuff going on.
I know John Ashcroft, of course, because he was the governor of Missouri, senator from Missouri, and not a bad guy. He had a tough break, I think, when he was the Attorney General of the United States, in there during a very difficult time. But he's a decent human being, and a lot of people who don't know him, Tom, gave him a bad rap during some of that period of 9/11. The guy is a good person.
He is a good person. I mean, I disagree with some of his politics, and I'm very much opposed to things like the Patriot Act.
Oh, sure.
But let's face it, all of us, anybody who's involved in any kind of either politic or media is dishonest if they say that they don't disagree with their friends or with people that they can get along with. And then, of course, there's that old, the 16th century book on war that says keep your friends close and your enemies closer.
Tell us a little bit more about yourself, some people who have not heard you on this program before.
Well, my wife and I, we live here in the Northwest, have been here now for about 20 years. I actually grew up in the Arizona desert, but we talked about that last time. Moved here maybe 20 years ago. My wife and I have been involved in different business, entrepreneurial efforts. Some of those have been successful. We've done a lot of stuff with different charities, done consulting work, mostly free consulting work for some religious organizations, things like that. We've also, of course, are the owners, as you mentioned at the open of this show, of Raiders News Update, which is an online news service that provides our daily news updates on edgy things, everything from politics to paranormal activity to archaeology to crypto archaeology. We almost try to be the daily news service coast to coast clone without the radio program, of course. But I think over the years we've made a name for ourselves, for good or bad, whatever that means, by following reputable, verifiable news sources, but while at the same time being willing to research and discuss some of these areas in our mysterious world that don't so easily fit into the bottle. All of that, of course, to say that those things are really just a natural outgrowth of our larger interest in writing, researching, and including sometimes some of these intriguing areas that we come across, such as the last time when I was on your show and we talked about our new book, but we talked about advances in science and stargates and whether there could be anything prophetic about that, or whether was there anything historical about it. But anyway, that's kind of who we are. That's kind of what we like to do. Been married to the same woman, by the way, for over 30 years. How do you figure that?
Good for you. Good. Nothing wrong with that, Tom, at all. Hey, let's pick up where we left off last time you were on, when we were talking about some of these ancient stargates and wormholes. Fascinating. I was talking about the movie Contact, where Jodie Foster got into that machine and kind of went through wormholes to visit various spots of the universe. What has some of your work and research shown you?
Well, you know, when I started out doing the research for this book, The Ahriman Gate, and that began with something else we'll talk about later tonight, and that is some of these sciences like transgenics and biotechnology, and maybe, I don't know, maybe about 10 years ago, I was seeing that some of these sciences were advancing, and they were slowly creeping into news reporting, turning up in some stories here and there. But I read a story where fully one-fourth of all research grants that year went to transgenic science. And I thought, wow, you know, one-fourth of all tax dollars that are put over into research grants went to transgenics. What is transgenics? I don't even know what that is. And so I went and started reading about it, and when I got an understanding of what it was, I couldn't understand why people weren't talking about the ethics or the philosophical questions that might be raised, in particular by transgenics, but some of the other areas of biotechnology. And so I started doing this research, and I wrote a couple of editorials, one of them that received wider publication. I think I told you last time Cal Thomas had sent me an email. He had read it in a newspaper somewhere, but he thought it, to him, it was indicative of a world that was entering a quickening period of time, events that foreshadowed end times biblical prophecy.
Right.
And so he sent me this email, and then not long after that, I was on a different radio show, I was on a show where I was actually being the spokesman for the film company that you mentioned, Cloud 10 Pictures, where I was promoting this movie that Louis Gossett Jr. and Judd Nelson was in. It's called Deceived, but it was about, the people who had been altered, and therefore through this altering they had received telekinetic powers, things like that. And but now we were discovering that this was happening because there were these evil aliens that were trying to intrude into their lives and that sort of thing. But while I was on that show, that was Dr. Monteith's show, and I knew he was a retired medical doctor. And so I asked him during the show, since we were talking about that subject, if he believed that science was actually going to develop post-humans, transhumans, with telekinetic powers and abilities, but maybe not even that. Maybe just, you know, is science actually going to succeed in creating a brand new species of human that's going to cohabit this earth through biotechnology and genetic engineering and so on? And he actually started crying during the show. And told me how that he had went to a medical convention, and he had just returned from it, and they were talking about some of these very issues in a way, I guess, that at least the medical community believed that it was inevitable. And it upset him so much, just listening to him, you know, cry and talking about it and how he believed that we were crossing over some barriers that we shouldn't, and that it was an assault against God and all that, I thought, man, you know, somebody really ought to be researching this and talking about this, because at least on my side of the aisle, I had just stumbled across this information accidentally. I didn't see that anybody was talking about it. And so I decided to try to take a stab at it myself. And so I started compiling this research on anything, by the way, that I could find, as well as making contacts with actual people who were involved in biotechnology.
Anybody was there much out there at the time?
Well, there were people who were working in the biotech field, but trying to get them to talk to you, not because it was a conspiracy, but because they're, you know, everybody's busy. Everybody's time is at a premium to them these days. It was difficult to get anybody to be willing to sit down and take enough time to talk to me, but I finally ran across Dr. Bob Hakala and some other people who I both met with personally. And also was able to send them a great deal of information, something like 400 pages of my own information, which they were able to go through and tell me, you know, what part of it was real, what part was fictional, what part of it was futuristic, you know, maybe real someday, not real today.
Right.
So I was doing all of that, and I actually had intended... And the reason I was trying to stack around myself so many people who are experts in these fields is because I am not a doctor, and I didn't go to a university where I earned a degree in any kind of medical field, so much of this was alien to me. And so I wanted to make sure that whatever I was saying, doing, editorializing, and also going to put into this book that at that point I thought I was going to write, that it would be accurate. And so I was collecting these resources around myself. And along the way, I ran into an old college professor friend of mine. And the point was made from him that if I wanted to reach the largest number of people, I really should write a book of fiction. Because according to him, and now I look back, I don't know whether he was right or not, but according to him, most people weren't interested, especially in reading any kind of a stuffy textbook. In fact, a great deal of publishers had come to the point where they wouldn't even publish a textbook.
I think he's right. You know, just with my experience in writing this first book that we've got coming out next month, which is a nonfiction, you know, we like it because of the subject matter. But I think your friend's absolutely right, Tom. I think to take a very technical approach to a topic, if you put it into a fictional book, you've got a better chance of getting it published and read.
Well, and so that's what I, you know, so what I did was I brought my wife on board because she's much more creative than I am. And I had never written fiction, although, and I have to say the book's done very good. It is the all-time best-selling book for VMI. They've been in business for several decades, so that's pretty good. And we've got about, we're up to, I think, almost 50 five-star reviews now. So
good for you.
That's been really good. We've been happy about all that. But it was during the process, to try to kind of get back to your question, the thing that was most thrilling to me, George, during the collecting of all of this research for this book, was that I started coming across this redundant telling down through time of an event where the gods had come down and tinkered with DNA. And because I was studying transgenics and DNA and the altering of the human species, I kept running across these articles that had been written by different university students and things like that. And so these were theses that were being written by you know, guys that were, or and women who were smart, and they were earning their PhDs and things like that, but they were writing their theses and were publishing their theses online, that kept connecting these stories of the ancient chimera and mythology and things like that. And I found it unusual that while I was researching the possible transhuman, post-human era that I'm increasingly believing that we're heading toward, while I was doing that research, I kept coming across all this ancient mythology where the gods came down, tinkered with DNA, blended their species with human DNA, created Hercules and all these people. And it seemed to me at one point that I was actually retracing the first records in history of an actual transgenic science, which had been conducted by these super intelligences that I wasn't all that familiar with, but who, for their own reasons, were, you know, what I came to later believe, the first people to open the Ahriman Gate. In fact, I became so interested in those documents that I continued to write even after the book. I wrote the 14-part Stargate series. I wrote another book that's coming out here in probably 3 or 4 months called Nephilim Stargates. I'm working on a sequel right now to the book, and I'm also working on a nonfiction book on biotech and genetic modification and so on. But the part that became intriguing to me was, I guess, maybe a growing belief in me part of mythology was more than mythology, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
And it was happening in my mind because I was up to, 1,700, 1,800 pages of research material, something like that. And I don't mean just printed stories off the internet. I mean piles of collected specific pieces of information. And I was seeing that all over the world, different civilizations, none of these who, you couldn't say that all of them had been connected by the Phoenicians, maybe getting in their boats and traveling across the sea and taking their ideas to some other country. All around the world, the ancient Chinese, the Assyrians, the Greeks, the Egyptians, the Sumerians, the earliest mythologies, were talking about the gods coming down and mingling their species with the human race. And for the life of me, you know, I said, well, from the Sumerians all the way down to UFO knots of today and everything.
Well, and the book of Genesis, I guess, if you want to interpret that.
Well, no, I did do that. And I found that there was this universal mythos surrounding these events that was providing the closest thing to empirical evidence in my mind. For what one might call the documentation of a genuine historic, maybe even supernatural event, if you want to use those kinds of words. And I can tell you, because I'm also, I was a pastor for 25 years, and I did do some things, I was a theologian, things like that. I can tell you that there's laws that we use in biblical interpretation to determine whether something might be perceived as a fact.
Right.
And I started applying some of those same principles, some of those same rules that we use for determining what is or isn't fiction. And I found that when I was looking at how almost instantly populations around the world had went from being hunter-gatherers to forming these advanced civilizations, and I started looking at how overnight complicated mathematics, astronomy, science, engineering techniques, people capable of building buildings and observation towers and pyramids, and it was happening around the world with an astounding similarity. And many of these containing astronomical, astronomy qualities, which continue to astonish us today. But I noticed that among the most well-developed of those societies, the people that developed writing and languages, sophisticated forms of communication, that they also instantly started writing down records of this starting phenomenon. And it was being kept. Some people refer to these as cargo cults. Some people talk about holy men and prophets, things like that. But the bottom line was there were those, those librarians or historians or whatever who interested themselves in recording what or who had suddenly descended through these gates of heaven and involved themselves with these antediluvians. Now, during my research into that story, I found in Assyrian, Egyptian, Greek, other great mythologies that these gods, in order to materialize, in order to express themselves in three-dimensional forms, for whatever reason, seemed to require the need to blend various species. And so it brought me back to transgenics. And that's kind of how I started, looking at this just only as what's going on in modern science, but I kept running into this old story, this ancient story from the earliest records of these beings who wanted to express themselves, and so they come down and they started blending these various.
No matter what you checked, it kept coming up, didn't it?
It came up all over the world. Everywhere I looked, everywhere where there was, sophisticated methods for record keeping, writing, things like that. And anybody, of course, who has studied this knows that I'm telling the truth, that it exists in the history of every great society, every great civilization, every great religion. There is this story where these beings came down, came through a portal, came down on the top of a mountain, whatever, but they extended themselves into the material world. And then what I started doing, George, was I noticed that in modern times, these stories of ufology and alien abduction, and some of the other crypto appearances of beings that they're there 1 minute, they're gone the next, that sort of thing. And I found that there was a story that, for the life of me, seemed to echo what I had found in ancient history.
Let's come right back to this, Tom, when we return. This fascinates me. I'm George Norrie. Our special guest tonight, Tom Horn, as we're talking about multidimensional beings, portals, ancient stargates on Coast to Coast AM. Well, Thai police in Thailand are saying that the American suspect arrested there has admitted to killing 6-year-old JonBenet Ramsey. That, according to the head of Thailand's immigration police. It is apparently a surprise breakthrough in the decade-old murder mystery that has cast a cloud of suspicion over even the parents at the time. John Mark Carr, 41, according to the Associated Press, admitted to the killing after he was arrested at his downtown apartment. We're just going to have to wait and see more information unfold on this particular story. And it is unclear whether he got a teaching position in Bangkok, where he was since June 6th. His visa has been revoked, calling him an undesirable person, given the accusations against him, and he's expected to be returned to the United States. Now, this is coming from police in Thailand. I want to see some other stories backing this up, but that's the latest in the JonBenet Ramsey murder case, the 10-year-old case. When we come right back, we'll continue our discussion on stargates with our special guest, Tom Horn, here on Coast to Coast AM. Tom, if indeed we were visited during the ancient days by beings that genetically modified and manipulated us, how do we know it wasn't spacecraft as opposed to just these portals or stargates?
Well, it may be both. I mean, it may be that there is a kind of stargate technology that that is beyond us that we don't understand yet. Maybe we will understand it as we venture forward into quantum physics and things like that. But and it could also be that there are intelligences that are so far in advance of us that they manipulate areas of quantum physics that we haven't yet understood. Maybe we won't understand them for thousands of years. But the irony is, George, as I was, the interesting thing is here, I start out as a pastor of 25 years, and now I'm kind of semi-retired from that, and I'm doing some different writing, researching, and I get an interest in this whole idea of transgenics, and probably the reason why transgenics interested me was because I had a question about whether we should be breaching barriers that were placed between the species by God in the book of Genesis. So, you know, that's probably part of what got me interested in
okay.
it. But then as I'm looking at that and I'm trying to understand it, and I've always been a person that's, you know, I try to be very honest. I try to take a very honest, objective approach to looking at evidence. And as I started going back into the earliest records of human history, where in areas where I had never gone before, kind of sounds like Star Trek, doesn't it? Where to go, where no man.
It's the open.
But you know, I was seeing the stories of legend that I had always thought of and understood of, you know, as nothing more than lore, mythology, or at least maybe. You know, so the ancients interpreting the changing of the seasons in terms of magic and stuff, because they couldn't really understand what was happening. So I was kind of one of those guys, you know. And but then something started happening, and as I started coming up with this idea for the book, The Ahriman Gate, I thought, well, you know, what if there really was an event? What if something actually happened? And the more I kind of opened myself to that idea and picked up the report, the history from cultures around the world, I found that there was so much redundancy that I think if the evidence had been presented in a court of law, it would be perceived as enough evidence to push a jury, you know, over the envelope that they would have to believe that something, in fact, had occurred. What and what was it? What was it? The Earth was suddenly visited. The Earth was suddenly changed. The life forms on the Earth were suddenly accelerated. Something indeed occurred. Now, that doesn't mean that this isn't something that could fit within the disciplines of theology and mainstream religion. It might mean that the Bible is, to us at least, that are, you know, let's say in the Christian circle, the Bible is the supreme record, the ultimate record, among other records, of an event which actually did occur. And so, So there I was. I'm doing this research, and I'm collecting these records from around the world that seem to be telling the same story to me over and over again about these superintelligences who somehow came down and, for whatever reason, in order to express themselves, needed to involve themselves with human DNA. So they're coming down, they're taking women, which is a story, as you said, that's also told in the book of Genesis, mm-hmm. and they're using this DNA, and the very simplistic way to look at this is that they came down and sexually involved themselves with women and they have offspring, but I don't think that's what's happened. I think as you look at the entire record and you look at technology as it's advancing today, at least to me, it becomes obvious that they had a technology at their disposal where they could use genetic material. But then the bigger question becomes, why did they need to use material to provide for themselves something that we could see and touch and feel and understand? And it could be because they were of a dimension different than we are. And that's where, you know, multi-dimensions, stargates, things like that come into play, because the only way they could manifest themselves to us in three-dimensionality is that they needed something of our material to express themselves to us. And by the way, that's what took me then over into ufology, and I started reading, you know, stuff that had been written by John Keel and Jacques Vallée and guys like this, and I was astonished. I still remember the day when I sat back and just put my hand on the top of my head, and I thought, you know what? I'm reading the same story. Different people are telling the story in different ways, but event. And the pieces of this event, the parts of it, are identical. From civilization to civilization and from generation to generation, the story is exactly the same. It's being told over and over and over again, and people interpret it based on their own, their own convictions or worldviews or whatever. But these modern, and what's ironic is that these researchers, like I mentioned, John Keel and Dr. John Mack, these guys use the same language. In fact, they even say in their writings, Passport to Magonia, like that, that what we are seeing appears to them to be identical to the ancient stories of biblical demonology and angelology, that we're talking about the same thing, this connection between what the ancient watchers were doing and modern abduction phenomenon, which included the fact that vital energy, molecularized energy, it was associated somehow with their needs for three-dimensional expression, because they were of a dimension that we don't yet understand. Now, for people of faith, what I would say, who might be bothered by that idea,
and some people could get upset. You're right.
They could get upset about it. And by the way, I'm a very devout conservative Christian, and so I had to be able to reconcile somehow this kind of thinking with my worldview and with my theology. But it really wasn't that difficult the more I thought about it, because here's where I came to. If the Creator alone, if God alone, possesses the power to speak, in Hebrew that's Haya, that's Genesis, and to say, let there be, and the Creator calls raw atomic nuclear energy in the molecularized form, but after the fact, that created living energy is available for manipulation. We do it all the time. We're doing it now. That's the whole point about transgenics and biotechnology and genetic modification, whatever. that after it is called in the molecularized form, it is available to us to be manipulated. And the story of these gods who came down is that they did exactly that. Whoever you want in your mind to say the god was who called all of this creation together, the story is that the gods, the sons of God, they came down and constructed these three-dimensional expressions. And by the way, that would explain why, at least in modern times, animals have been killed, humans, and mutilated and stolen in these so-called UFO flap areas.
No question. Now, here's the possibilities, though, Tom. Either these beings came down from within our universe and they were physical in nature, or they were multidimensional, coming from other dimensions within our universe, or they were part of the multiverse, other universes, and somehow, again, these portals or stargates all connected allowed them to transform themselves here. But I don't know what it is. I mean, part of me likes to believe that it was a physical manifestation, but I'm beginning to wonder if it wasn't some kind of multidimensional visitation.
Well, what I came to believe, what I believe now, and I don't, and I'm not saying that I'm right, is first of all, number one, that an event did happen. I think most people would agree with that.
I would agree with that.
Kind of hard to explain us all being here, and the youth of the Earth and these life forms, without accepting the fact that either God or something else changed the Earth, its environment, and its inhabitants, 6,000 or 7,000 years ago. The Earth may be much older than that, but something happened in relatively recent history. Now, there are a lot of reasons why, and I'm writing about some of this in my new book that's coming out, but there are a lot of reasons why I believe that it was a multidimensional expression in which they involved themselves with the human species, because that's the record. That's the record that we have in all of the different ancient books, and that they used genetic material, humans, plants, animals, fish, everything. They used genetic material to embody themselves, and but that event was not necessarily perceived as pleasant. In fact, if you look at the Sumerians, the Hebrews, the Hittites, the Babylonians, the Assyrians, they constructed these elaborate gateways on Earth, both at their homes and also at their cities, that most of the research I've done has shown were symbolic of what they perceived as being celestial openings through which dark influences or light influences could seek entry into their homes or into their cities. That's another part of the pattern, in other words.
I've always wondered, Tom, if pyramids were not the mechanism to open up these portals.
Well, we talked about that the last time I was on your show, and I think that, like, the Tower of Babel could have indeed been that. And I've had discussions with different people, including Stan Deo, who's on your show sometimes, about the Tower of Babel and what might have been happening there, and some of these other. To me, the pyramid has never been explained. The Great Pyramid has never been explained. Still isn't explained. It's an enigma wrapped in a mystery. But the point is that the story that we do understand. Why did the Assyrians in the gateways entering into their cities, why did they construct these elaborate, monstrous-sized gateways and then use such imitative magic for protection against undesirable entities at their homes, but also in their cities, their gateways, which I, by the way, think were symbolic of stargates. But they're represented on Earth in these archways by using these elaborate construction ceremonies, which are then blessed by the names of good omens. And then they construct these colossal transgenic creatures out of rock that are flanked on these city gates and palace entries. And we know that from their religion, this was so that it would keep undesirables, spiritual undesirables, from forces from being able to come through those portals into the cities. And then they would put these magic symbols, winged spirits and magic devices and things like that under the ground as you walked through the gateway that would keep undesirables from. What was it that they were afraid of? What was it that they were trying to stop? You know, they create these entries into their cities or entries into their homes representative of stargates, but they have this interest in only allowing some kinds of forces to enter, and they want to stop other forces from coming through. Now, when you look at the case, for instance, of the Watchers in the Book of Enoch, and also the story of the Old Testament that you mentioned, I think that some of those may be among the most important documents, because this moving through portals and the use of vital energy as a construct material for forming a dimensional pathway in which these multidimensionals could express themselves in our three-dimensional reality, those books are important because they're some of the sources that include this idea that both animals and humans were blended. Now I have theories about why that is.
Now, what do you mean by blended?
Well, Enoch says in the 7th chapter of the Book of Enoch, he says that the Watchers sinned against the animals as well as the humans. Now, a lot of people say that that's talking there about cannibalizing. In other words, they started eating the humans, and they ate the animals, and they ate everything else. But my research led me to believe that the cannibalizing there was more along the line of a technological cannibalization. In other words, the rape or the use of raw material. Like you or I might cannibalize one engine out of a truck to get parts for the engine of another truck, if you know what I mean. And shortly thereafter, then, they started expressing themselves in form. Nephilim were born. And you have to ask if the only reason that the Watchers were involving themselves with women was because of their beauty, that they lusted after them and they wanted to come down and copulate with them. If that was the only reason that was happening, then what was all this stuff with tinkering with animals and fish and all the rest of that all about? And eating a fish wouldn't have been called a sin anyway, because Hebrews didn't have any prohibition against eating a fish. So something else was going on there. And by the way, George, I tell people that you have to admit that even if these ancient stories you and I are talking about, this lore, even if it's nothing more than a fiction or myth, and I'm convinced it's much more than that.
Or theory.
Our interpretation of what was recorded. And maybe we've got it all, maybe I've got it all wrong. But a person has to admit that the metaphorical resemblance to parts of what's happening now today with transhumanism and transgenics is astounding. In fact, even the secular press has taken to using terms like chimera from Greek mythology when referring to the transgenic science that we're using now. And the chimera, you know, was a hybrid beast that breathed fire, but it foreshadowed natural disasters. And I kind of see that as a metaphor, that a transgenic blending of species, of living organisms, people, and food, and animals, and whatever, could potentially be foreshadowing.
Well, you know, you talk about John Keel, and who's to say that the Mothman stories aren't some kind of mixture of the human animal, chimera, and something went awry in a laboratory years ago?
It could be either of those, in my opinion. I happen to think there's something to it. And it could be either of those. It could also be that by tinkering with things, we invite to us forces that we don't understand.
Stay with us, Tom. We'll be back with more in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM.